Session 4.
Page 73. We'll just read the verse. This is, you've already covered this one because this is in the hexagonal room in the middle. Okay? This is bodhicitta. Okay? But here we go anyway. 1, 2, 3. I have slipped and fallen into the sea of the suffering life. Bless me to see that every living being, everyone my own mother, has fallen into. Grant me then to practice this highest wish for enlightenment, to take on myself the task of freeing the world. Okay. And that's all the construction up to now, from the courtyard out to the hexagonal room, is Mahayana. Okay? That's Bodhisattva attitude. The first half was the secret side of Mahayana, and the second half was the open side of Mahayana. So we finished what we call Gyebu Chumbo, which means the big capacity, great capacity person. And everything up to now is that. So all the rooms up to now are part of what we call Mahayana. Great capacity. Now we're into... The next room out is going to be a room for what we call people of medium capacity. And the difference between a person of Mahayana capacity and medium capacity is that, as you know from your homework, medium capacity person is interested in getting themselves out of any kind of suffering at all. And they understand that even this realm, and to live like this kind of a person, like a human, is suffering. So they're interested in getting out of that also. But they still haven't reached the point where they want to do it, or they want to make sure that everyone else does it also. Okay? So that's what we call a medium capacity person. So the next two verses going backwards are for people of medium capacity. Okay? And these verses are divided into two. Verse number 5 and verse number 6. Verse number 5 is just figuring out that this kind of life is not such a good, not such a hot thing. Okay? And verse number 6 is figuring out what to do about it, how to stop your immediate suffering in this kind of existence. So 5 and 6 go together. And 6 is really understanding karma and understanding what you have to do to get out, what you have to do to get out of this suffering life. Where does the suffering come in your life? And we got to make up a room where, I don't know, you figure it out, but it's going to be something like, it's got to be the understanding that what you do today creates your reality next month and 6 months from now. And conversely, that you're responsible for everything that's going on around you. And there, the implication of that is that you have to be really careful with what you do. Okay, so I don't know what kind of room you want to have there, but the idea is that maybe a mirror, you know, maybe a mirror room would be good. Okay, before the hexagonal room, and I would make it a little bit smaller, and then you know the small capacity person's room is going to be even smaller, and then you can remember. Okay, so. I think we're talking about a mirror room, because the main thing here is that you realize that you are creating your reality. And if you don't like it, you know, Ken Rinpoche is always constantly saying, I would come home from work at Andean, you know, in Diamond Business and complain, and he'd say, well, if you don't like it, why don't you fix it, you know? And that's all he would ever say, you know. You know, I wanted some commiseration, you know. Like, it's not so bad, or, you know, yeah, your boss is really a bad person, or he would just say, if you don't like it, just fix it, you know. So, this is where you realize that you're making it all, and then you look in the mirror. I think a mirror room would be good. And then you, the point is that realizing that you make it, that you stop doing any kind of Tashin Tawan Nam Kyang Pong Wan Dang means you start to understand that you can't entertain even a slight bad deed. Okay, because there's no slack. Nobody can cut you any slack. Karma doesn't cut any slack, and the slightest thing you do has repercussions karmically. Okay, it's just being irritated with somebody on the street that bumps into you is already creating a lousier New York City 6 months from now. You know, like the street will be worse 6 months from now. And you have to understand that, and you have to act on that. And it's very, very hard, because your natural reaction to people bothering you is that you feel justified to think something bad. You know, there's reasonable people who bother you, and there's unreasonable people who bother you. And the unreasonable people, there just seems to be no excuse for them. And it seems like it really is their fault, and it couldn't be your fault. And that it's somehow more justified to be upset or irritated with an unreasonable person. But you made them. Every detail of them you created. And you couldn't be perceiving them except that your mind is making you perceive them. Okay? And their husband or wife or mother or son thinks they're the most wonderful person in the world, just as they are. Because they have a different set of karmas. So, if you don't like it, then fix it, okay? So that'll be a mirror room, okay? And that'll be the medium capacity person. And the idea, something for acting carefully about little things, I don't know, what should that be? I don't know. Like you're tiptoeing across the room? Huh?
On precarious stands.
What's that?
Little glass figurines.
Oh, that's okay, and you're tiptoeing through, okay? All right? And you're tiptoeing through the room, all right? You got to walk careful through that room. Okay, and the idea is that Tashin Tawan Nam Kyang Pong Wan Dang means once you understand about karma, you really have to avoid even the tiniest bad deeds, because you can't get away with anything, because it's all being recorded by whom? Saint Peter, was it? It's recorded by your own consciousness. Okay, as you're aware of having the thought. While you hear the thought, it's by hearing it, it's being karmically stored, like by this VCR called your consciousness, and it'll come back. And that's all it takes for karma to be planted, is that you have any kind of dim awareness of it. So the minute you have a thought, you've already collected the karma, and the imprint has already been made on your mind, and it will come back. So even just having the thought to say something and do something without saying anything or doing anything is already ruining your future a month from now. And you'll never know why. And the whole world goes around suffering because they don't understand that. And they're like blindly struggling against this thing, and by struggling they're making it worse the next day and the next month. And it's like ironic, you know, it's sad that people are, their natural reaction is what's making their lives worse and then kills them, you know. then you go back to the last room before the courtyard, and it's this constant reactions to your life, to your world, that makes the fish, what do you call it, fish line, get more knotted up, and then that eventually kills you. That's it. That's what makes you mortal. And if you could fix that, you wouldn't be mortal. People think I'm being that I'm exaggerating when I say the point of Buddhism is not to die, but it really is. That's the whole point. And you don't have to die like that. But every time you struggle or fight back against something negative in a negative way, you put one more knot there, and you tie it up one more. You choke it a little more, and the accumulation of a lifetime of choking the central channel is that you kill yourself, and that's what makes you mortal. So if you can reverse it, then you have a chance to stop that, and you become enlightened. Okay. Why didn't we see anybody do that? Why does His Holiness appear to be getting older? That's your bad karma. Okay. How does he look to himself? You have to ask him. But what you hear might depend on your bad karma also. Okay. All right. Really. Okay. Don't think no one's ever done it. Thousands and thousands of people have done it. Okay. In Tibet. Okay. So let's read that one. It's on 64. It should be the glass room with the glass figurines and your tiptoeing. Okay. There's this argument. People say, how can I watch every single thought in my mind? This is impossible. I can't do that. And Master Shantideva, remember the thing he said? He said, if you were walking across the room with a bowl full of water, up right up to the lid, do you think you could make it to the other side? And the guy says, no, it's impossible. And he says, well, let's just try, and I'll stick this knife up to your neck, and if you slip, I'll cut your neck, okay? And the guy says, well, maybe I could do it, you know? You know, like, if there's a will, there's a way, okay? If you understand the consequences, you would do it, okay? All right, here we go. 1, 2, 3. Grant that these pure thoughts may lead me to be watchful and to recall what I should be doing. Grant me to give the greatest care to make the vows of morality the essence of my practice. They are the root of the Buddha's teaching. Okay. Let's see. Do the one before. I think we'll meditate on that one. Okay? Just briefly. All right? And it's watching your mind. Okay? Watching your mind. And what's the difference between that and the next room? Huh? Which direction? Towards the center. By the way, very tantric, I'll tell you a secret, okay? Everything should go towards the center. So. What's the next room? Huh? Yeah, the six hexagonal. But what's the difference between this room and that one? Yeah, at that one you're starting to do it for other people. And this one you're still doing it for yourself. Okay. That's the main thing.
But that's deceptive for the chicken in that one?
Yeah. Except for the diamond. Okay? The diamond is ultimate bodhicitta. Right? If you want to get technical.
When you reach the six perfections, that is that you begin to do that as a greater capacity? That begins to be greater capacity?
He can tell you. What's the difference between the perfection of wisdom and plain wisdom?
Perfection of wisdom.
And ordinary wisdom.
Ordinary wisdom isn't a perfectionizer because you're not. You're not. Oh dear. The perfection of wisdom is the direct perception of emptiness under the influence of bodhicitta.
Yeah.
The regular perception of, or the regular wisdom,
yeah,
isn't that. It doesn't have bodhicitta.
So without bodhicitta, then the result is different.
Yeah, and it's not the perfection of wisdom. So you could have wisdom in the room with the glass, the mirror room, but you can't have the perfection of wisdom until you got that incense pot. in the room. Okay? Alright, here we go. We'll do the mirror room and then work out to the courtyard, into the courtyard. Spend some time in the hexagonal room because you've only done it once, okay? Okay. Page 55. We'll read it, okay? 1, 2, 3. Bless me to perceive all that's wrong with the seemingly good things of this life. I can never get enough of them. They cannot be trusted. They are the door to every pain I have. Grant me then to strive and serve with happiness and freedom. Okay. This is still medium capacity persons. And this is where you recognize that the things that seem to be going well are not. Okay. And I suggest a corridor going, a hallway going into the middle sized room. Okay. So going into the glass room, going into the mirror room, there's a corridor from the room before, which we haven't got to yet. And I suggest windows. And you're looking out, and you're looking out at something. And this is a meditation that comes from the Abhidhamma Kosha. It's very beautiful. It's called Midupa Gomba. And basically, you look out the window, and you try to imagine all the good things in your life 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. Okay? All the things you think are great. You look out, and you see them as they're going to be. So, you know, if you're attracted to some other person physically, you're looking out and they're aging, you know, and you see them how they're going to look 5, 10, 15 years from now, and imagine how they're going to look, and you see, and they will look like that, you know. Then you look out, and there's a meditation part there where you try to imagine all the food you've ever eaten, you know, like mountains of food, you know, and all the crap you've ever crapped from that food. And no, really, and you just look out and you realize that this is not pleasure, you know, that there's no end to it, you know, you can't get enough. Chepe Mingo means it doesn't matter how much you eat, like you're still going to be hungry in a few hours, and it doesn't really matter what you eat, it's still going to turn into crap. And then if you really saw that your groceries for a few months piled up, and the crops for a few months piled up, it wouldn't seem so wonderful, you know. And it's literally mountains, tons of food you've eaten already, and it's gross. And you're supposed to, Midupa Gomba means meditation on the gross. Midupa means gross, okay, ugly. And you even, they say, see the city that you're living in, and advance it in time, like. See New York City, how it will be 100 years from now, 200 years from now, 500 years from now. And everything, they say everything ruined, you see? All your friends' bodies, old, wrinkled, ugly, all the place you live in, broken down, dusty, rafters fallen in, walls fallen down, you know. And when you do this in the Abhidhamma, you start here. It's called Tewa, at the Tewa. And if you want, you could stop in the corner and do that way, okay? And you open a little piece here, like an open wound. Like, I had a friend who had cancer, and they had this open wound that never would heal. And it was just open all the time. And you imagine, like, an open hole right here, and you can see the skull. You can see the white of the skull, and it's like oozing and pussy. And you just open up a tiny hole right here. And then when you get it clear, you open it up a little more, you know, and you start opening it up to see what it really is, you know what I mean? And it's just like rotting. The skin rots away here. And this is supposed to be a good antidote for desire, okay? And then you just slowly do your whole skull and all the bones, and then you keep going like that, and then you do your clothes, like, are rotting off and falling apart, and then you keep going, and then you spread it out from your body, and the wood of the floor is getting old. This place, how it will look 10, 15, 20 years from now, especially if you don't get any money to fix anything. And and it's just rotting, and then the wood is rotting, and then you move out to the wall, and the walls have fallen down, and, you know, the good people of Reading Township are all dead, and and the trees have fallen down, and the ponds are rotting, and the fish that used to live in them are all dead, and it reminds me of the day after that movie, you know. When I saw that, I said, "Oh wow, McDupa Gumba," and then you keep going out, and you do it. They say until you reach the ocean. It's a very powerful meditation. It's in the Abhidharma. And then when you reach the ocean, you dry it up, and you let the fish die, and then you see their skeletons there, and then you just finish it like that. The whole world, including you, is just rotten and ruined. And this is the way all good things happen, especially work on the things that you're attracted to. You know, like another person that you're attracted to, or, you know, some position. I used to be very attached to my position at work. And then one day, I was reading the history of the people who had lived in my building. If you work in New York, it's a really good meditation. They don't even know. You know, I know who lived in Leon's house. It was Joe D'Alessandro, who was Andy Warhol's star, who's now pumping gas somewhere. Oh. And, yeah. And he was this big, handsome guy, you know. And now he's out pumping gas somewhere, and he's old and he's ugly, and then we don't even know who lived there before that because they're dead. Oh, I do know. That was the parish house of a Christian church, which is now the synagogue next door. Mm-hmm. And the whole congregation went to Staten Island for a picnic on a ferry, and the ferry sank. And they all died. Like, almost every person died, and there were just a few left, and they sold it to the synagogue, and then they sold Leon's house. And these are the stories of the buildings you live in, you know, and think about it. And there'll be a time, people struggle to get a place like that. And then there'll be a time when people can't even remember who was there. And what's the use, you know, what's the use of wasting your whole life to get a place like that? And then just die, you know, and then people don't even remember who was there before. I don't know who was there before the Christian people who sank on the ferry, you know. And that's the story of everything is like that. So you have to think of all the things that you're attracted to in this life, your parents, your family, your job, your own mind, and imagine them rotting and falling apart. Is this, what's the point, you know, you're just trying to be depressed or what, you know. There's two kinds of karma. We talked about it in Washington. There's dirty good karma and there's pure good karma. Okay, dirty good karma is what has produced all the nice things in your life, and dirty good karma has one very bad problem with it, is that it wears out. Okay, so how does it wear out? By enjoying the thing. You see, so every minute you have of the thing, you're killing the thing. You see, it's very ironic. You know, every moment that you're enjoying something, you're using it up. So the longer you have a close friend, the more you've used up of them. You see what I mean? Every day that you spend with them, you're using up a day of them. And it'll wear out, and then you'll lose them. You'll be separated from them. If a good thing has been created by that kind of karma, you must lose it. It must get old. It must get rotten. You must be torn away from it. And the purpose of this hallway is going to be to think about that. Okay? And that's the verse before. We'll read it, okay? Actually, we did read it, right? So just realize that all the good things are like that. All the good things. Don't put your hope in them. Yiten mirung means you can't trust them. They're going to die. They're going to rot. They're going to degenerate. And your own body also, because all of those things, the Sakche Nyerkendengi Pumbo means, has been created by dirty good karma. Dirty meaning it wears out. Okay, what's pure good karma? Pure good karma is karma you do with a knowledge of emptiness, and it has this quality of perpetuating itself. It's self perpetuating, and that's why a Buddha field can go on forever. Okay, they don't wear out. You know, it's not like the longer you're there, the worse it gets or something like that. It just keeps rolling because they know how to make it roll, because they reinvest the good karma, okay? Like, this is, if you get some money, give it away as soon as you can. And then when you get the karma back from that, give that away. And Buddhas know how to do that in such a way that it perpetuates itself. It's the difference between fusion and fission or something like that. Like there's a point where you could reach in an atomic reaction that you get more energy out than you put in, so it'll go forever. And I remember they were working on it at my university when I was studying there, and they were worried that they would succeed because it would just burn through the earth. And so they were holding it up with magnets, you know, and they were trying to keep it in the air because if it ever dropped on the ground, it would melt to the earth because it would just eat, it would feed on whatever it touched. And they were afraid it would go down into the center of the earth and blow it up or something. And I understand that when they first set off the first atom bomb, they weren't exactly sure it wouldn't do the same thing with all the atmosphere. So anyway, what you want is fission of a. You want that. You want karmically. That's the difference. You know, one of it is like gasoline. You know, the more you burn of it, it makes a big mess and it wears out. And then the other one is like fusion, and that is it just feeds on itself bigger and bigger, so it perpetuates itself. So that's the difference between that's why Buddhas don't get old. And ugly and wrinkled and things like that. Okay, the karma which they're producing, we don't even call it karma. Well, what do we call it at that point? Merit and wisdom. They call it the two collections of merit and wisdom. Okay, like even the name gets changed. They don't call it pure karma. Really, I mean the Abhidharma does, but the higher schools don't call it. They call it the collection of merit and wisdom. Meaning, you know how to keep it going indefinitely, and that's a Buddha paradise. But we're talking about the corridor, glass windows leading into the mirror room, and you're looking out and you're looking at all the things that you like, okay? Your car, your house, your wife, you know, whatever is dear to you, and your own body and your own mind and your own hair, okay? And you're watching it fall apart, okay? And just watch it get old before your eyes. And fall apart and wake up to what's really going to happen in 5-10 years, okay? And you look through the window and see that, and then your idea about what you want in your life will change, and you'll go into the mirror room, because that the idea there is that, okay, I don't want to have this bad karma anymore, you know, I don't want to have that kind of karma anymore, and you're trying to see how you could change the karma into something more pure. And you're not going to collect that kind of bad karma anymore, the dirty good karma anymore, okay? You want to get out of that situation. Yeah?
You mentioned that pure good karma is karma done with the knowledge of emptiness.
Yeah.
Is that an intellectual or the direct?
After you see emptiness directly, you can't... They say you can't collect bad good karma anymore, okay?
So it's an intellectual.
And intellectual is enough to do pretty pure karma, but not exactly pure karma, okay? Eventually you have to see it directly. But that's a very big debate, whether an Arya has the truth of suffering, the noble truth of suffering anymore, the Arya truth of suffering. It's a big debate about whether they're even capable of creating new, dirty good karma. And generally they'd say no. You know, they'll still have to use up the ones they had before, in say 7 lifetimes, but they're not collecting new ones. And once you get to a certain point, you're an arhat, and you're not collecting new ones at all. So you go through 4 stages. First is Arya. Maybe you have 7 lives to go, and then Chirongwa, which means you have 1 more life to go in this lousy realm, and then Chirmiongwa, meaning you don't have to come back to this particular realm, but you still have to come back to one of the 2 higher realms. Form and formless realms. And then arhat, meaning you don't have to come back to any of the 3 realms. So those are the 4 possibilities you go through. But generally speaking, once you see emptiness directly, you're no longer collecting karma, which is dirty, which will ever produce a result. Like, you may collect seeds for it, but they'll never grow like that. Yeah.
Does that mean if you haven't seen emptiness directly, it doesn't matter what you do?
if you can do good deeds intellectually with wisdom, understanding the emptiness of them, then it would be close to a pure good karma. Technically, I'm not sure it would
is
be
that
a
middle one.
Not really, but it would be. Let's say it would be impure good karma, but it'd be the type that was leading you to pure good karma directly, in a direct way. How's that? Something like that. I guess that's about the best you could hope for at that point. Yeah.
Is there, by the same token, is there dirty bad karma and pure bad karma?
That's a good question. I don't know. But that would almost be saying that you're committing bad karma with a knowledge of emptiness, which I...
Or with like a really wrong view or something? Because I don't understand how the second law of karma about increase...
Yeah.
Most of the unpleasant experiences are relatively small.
Yeah.
And if they've increased exponentially since the time of the non-virtue that I committed to get
right.
them as a reward,
yeah.
What incredibly tiny thing must I have done?
Yeah, I know what you mean. They answer that by asking a rhetorical question in the Abhidharma. They say, can one bad deed create multiple bad results? And can multiple bad deeds create one bad result? You see what I mean? And I think they'd probably say about your question that you did one pretty good bad thing, and you're having these small irritations for thousands of years, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like, every time you had to go on the subway in New York, the hundreds of those all together was the result of one sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
Okay, something like that. Yeah. Okay. They would say something like that. Yeah.
If once you've experienced a moment of pure bodhicitta,
yeah.
And at that point which is the same as the renunciation except directed towards others,
yeah.
Then at that point your primary wish or desire then would be liberation of all sentient beings.
Yeah, including yourself.
Samsara life.
Yeah.
So in order for you to it seems if you're in when you're headed towards the Buddha realm, wouldn't the only sort of missing piece or the only unhappiness you can experience be the continued suffering of sentient beings? It seems hard to imagine how perfect happiness could occur if there's still being stuck in samsara.
I see what you mean. There's a debate like that, and it goes like this. This is Axel's favorite debate. Anyway, if Buddhahood is pure bliss, then how can you ever reach it while people are still suffering? Because if you're still aware that people are suffering, isn't that a kind of sadness? So isn't Buddhahood blemished by the fact that your friends are still stuck and you're not, you know, and you can't really be totally happy knowing that they're still stuck? It's a very, very, very delicate question, and I once had two Christian friends came in from my childhood. They came and spent a few days with me in a retreat cabin, and this question really disturbed one of them, who's a very pure-hearted person, and he said, "I understand everything you've said, but it seems to me that the logical end of all of your talk is that you'd get to a place where you didn't feel any suffering, and you'd actually be unaware of the suffering of other people. And that doesn't seem to me to be much of a goal." You know, and that's a very hard question. That's a good question. I think what you'd have to say is, yeah, at that point, you would perceive all other living beings as deities. Simultaneously, they might not be perceiving themselves as deities. They might be plain old samsaric schmucks suffering, you know. And if you're omniscient, you'd have to be aware of that. You see what I mean? That they weren't seeing themselves that way. And by the way, there's no contradiction between them seeing themselves suffering and you seeing them as tantric deities. That's not a contradiction. That's okay. Because they're not self-existent. Yeah. But But what would it feel like to know that they were seeing themselves as suffering while you were seeing themselves as standard data? Because you're omniscient, so you must know that also. And I think in the, we had this debate in the monastery, and basically they say that compassion, you would feel compassion, and compassion is not suffering. You see what I mean? Like, it's, you would feel some, they'd say that, that a Buddhist compassion is a kind of bliss.
So it's kind of a sadness,
mm-hmm.
but it's a sweet sadness.
Yeah, yeah. It's the it's also a kind of bliss. So that concern for others is not suffering. You know, that's the that's where it comes down in the monastery when they debate it. It's a hard debate. We had it when the third Pabongkor Rinpoche had his Geshe exams. We debated it. I remember because it was very powerful. Here's Pabongkor Rinpoche, and he's debating this question, and it was really powerful. And then there was this big breakout. You know, the ceremony ended, and then the debate continued on the porch, I remember. and all these high Geshe's were still fighting over this question. Yeah, it's a good question. It's probably the most important question, I guess. Did you have a question?
On the generation of the karma thing again. In terms of, like, you say when someone hits Arya, they're no longer generating any of... The bad karma, or the bad
karma
kind of thing.
Yeah.
How's that?
In such a way that it will actually ever give its result. Okay.
So, but even though they still have a lot, you know, they just have cut off wrong views from having, you know, they're still bound by all of their kleshas and so forth. So, if they're still bound by all their kleshas and they're still reacting in negative ways, then how are they not able to generate that kind of bad karma?
It seems like they're still. I think what they say in the debate is that they're still collecting bad karma, but the momentum of their wisdom is such that that karma will never have time to reach fruition. You see what I mean? Something like that. You know? Something like that. Okay, yeah.
Just one more question about the bodhisattva and the six-sided room of the bodhicitta.
Yeah.
Could you clarify a little bit more the bodhicitta in the center? If that's deceptive bodhicitta, can you speak a little bit about
that? Well, there's two kinds of bodhicitta, which, you know, if you've been in the courses in New York, you know. One is called deceptive, one is called ultimate. Ultimate bodhicitta is the direct perception of emptiness. It has nothing to do with bodhicitta. It's just a nickname for it, okay? So, I think we had Ultimate Refuge the other day. Where was that? That was also? It's close to the same thing. Okay, it's just a code word for the direct perception of emptiness. It has nothing to do with bodhicitta as a compassion.
You were speaking about the diamond there as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned...
Yeah, you could say that that's ultimate bodhicitta. You could say that's ultimate bodhicitta, but it's not the point. The point is that... Those six sides on the outside of the room, the six walls, and the objects in front of each of the six walls are not Mahayana until they're imbued with bodhicitta. So you got to have that incense going. Okay? That's all. That's all. And that's what we call deceptive bodhicitta. But it's not deceptive because it's not powerful. It's just deceptive because it's at a certain level of reality called deceptive reality. But it's very real and very true. Okay, that's all.
And the
diamond in that's perceiving emptiness directly under the influence of bodhicitta, okay, which is the smell.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And they say under the influence because... Yeah, because you can't have it directly in your mind at that moment. Because it's focused on non-ultimate reality, which is all other living beings. Okay? That's all. Okay. So we'll do let's take a break and then we'll do Midupagoma, alright, and then you'll do that you start here. Mm-hmm. By the way, they also bring it back in the meditation, they bring it all back and then they close up the hole and then you know, you get up. But it's still not very pleasant. Okay, so take a break and we'll do a Midupagoma when you get back. Okay, we'll start again. The glass room, I have to clarify, it's not just generally doing good things or being careful, it's about your pratimoksha vows, okay? It's about your freedom vows, okay? In the glass, the mirror room refers specifically to keeping your pratimoksha vows. What are your pratimoksha vows? The mirror room is keeping your pratimoksha vows. Okay, what are your pratimoksha vows? If you've never taken any vows, then at least you have refuge, right? So you have 12 commitments there, and you have the 10 commitments that all Buddhists have. Okay, no killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, etc. Okay, if you have lifetime layman's vows, you have 5 or more. Okay, if you have novice vows, you have 10 or 36. If you have full monk's vows, 253. If you have full nun's vows,
I think it's 344, but there's different ones.
No, that's more. Anyway,
that's how you count. There's different schools.
364, right? Something. We figured out. You see that the full monk's vows, nun's vows have been broken. The lineage was broken in Tibet. And we figured out that if you have full monk's vows and you change your sex, it becomes full nun's vows. Seriously. So we were looking for 12 volunteers. So I was thinking that's what he is. Yeah. No, legally, that's the thing. Okay. Huh? I guess you could do it then, I think. Anyway. Yeah.
I was thinking about the question about Buddha's suffering, and I was thinking that even if the Buddha did experience grief, that he would be forced to experience it as bliss.
Yeah, I think so.
So it wouldn't make sense to say that he was being heartless in response to people's suffering.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
But you could say that he was perceiving a less than pure paradise because he had a perception of a blemish in his paradise.
No, I think he would perceive it as existing outside of his paradise, no? No, you say, that's down in the desire room.
I thought the paradise was...
but the
Huh?
Paradise is too small.
No, they always say that's why there's two form bodies. One is staying in the... Sambhogakaya stays in the paradise, and then the Nimanakaya goes down to the realms of suffering and helps people. So if there wasn't any realms of suffering, he'd be short one body. Okay, anyway, we better get... practice the whole, okay? Okay, we'll do Midupa Goma. Okay, you're going into the mirror room, which is your pratimoksha vows, okay? And the reason you want to get in there is that you realize that even the things that seem to be nice are not so nice about your life, and prove it to yourself by it's always good to be specific. Get to the corridor with the windows, look outside, see 4 or 5 things that you really like right now that are important to you in your life, like your own health or anything about your intellect or someone that you love or something that you own or a situation which is giving you comfort right now, like a good job or a relationship you have with somebody or things like that, and then look out the window and see where it's going to be in 5 or 10 years or 15 years, okay? Yeah.
Did you just review the first couple of rooms that changed, right?
Say again?
Did you say one of the rooms changed from the last description?
No, I just meant that the mirror room, which I had described in more general terms as trying to be careful not to do anything good, bad. I was going to say good or bad, meaning dirty good karma. I just made it more specific. It's your pratimoksha vows. In the verse, it says, make your pratimoksha vows the essence of your practice. Like that. The reason I did that is because we're going to get to a room tomorrow which is being good and not, which is not being bad and trying to be good. And because you understand that everything has a repercussion. So that's a different room. Is more the vows that you have, pratimoksha vows, because the function of pratimoksha vows is to get you out of samsara, you personally, and that doesn't talk about saving other people or anything. The motivation for becoming a monk or a nun classically in the Vinaya is only one thing, I want to get myself out of samsara. Okay, there's nothing in the Vinaya about saving all sentient beings or anything like that. It's just the required motivation for taking ordination is that you want to get yourself out of samsara. Okay, if you choose to become a bodhisattva, monk, or nun, that's a different story. But the classic Vinaya is I will avoid any, mainly speech or activity which is unwholesome so that I can get out of samsara. Okay? Did you have another question?
Some people thought they might be missing some rooms. Would you mind just running through them?
You guys get... I'll go around the room. Okay. Yeah, somebody asked me what we're up to. I don't even know. What's the first thing?
Yeah, the courtyard.
Yeah, courtyard. Also courtyard?
Completion
stage. Plumbing. And then in the hallway?
Retreats.
During your four tantric retreats? So we got...
That's a hallway.
That's a hallway.
No. The first... So you got one room and one hallway so far.
Yeah.
The room is completion stage. Well, you got the courtyard, which is enlightenment, tantric enlightenment, okay? Then you have the... which is called Sungjuk, okay? Then you have the completion stage room. Then you have the hallway going into it, which is during your four retreats, of four sessions each. And then you have
Kirim,
which is I think you got to be more creative in that room.
Phase one, phase two.
But it's basically starting to meet those beings. Okay, you're not one yourself yet, but you know you walk into a restaurant in the East Village and eat this huge meal and ask for the check. You know the story, okay? No, this old Israeli waitress comes up and says, who you've never met in your life, and says, I wouldn't charge a person practicing Vajrayogini. You know, and you're like, and they just turn around and say, have a nice evening, you know, and they just leave. And you leave her a $60 tip, because... <you know?
laughs>
Anyway, okay, so that's the Kirim room, okay? And that kind of stuff won't happen to you unless you
keep your
tantric vows. So now we got five. And if you do keep your tantric vows, that kind of stuff will happen to you. It's very encouraging, okay? It's also cheaper. Okay, what's the one before that?
Initiation.
Yeah, gotta have the initiation, which gives you the vows and plants the four seeds through the four empowerments, right?
Mm-hmm. And then
the yeah, the one with the vows.
The hallway.
No, we did that already.
No, that's number five.
That was keeping the vows.
Keeping the vows, we said that.
Yeah.
There's a hallway.
Yeah,
that's it. Oh, once you're loading the vows in with getting the vows.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is in the Crystal Palace.
The hallway's keeping the vows.
Right. Yeah, yeah, the hallway's keeping the vows. Hopefully the teacher, when he gave you the initiation, taught you the vows. Okay. Then how do you get into the mandala room?
Yeah, this kind of a tree is going.
How do you get into the mandala? How do you make the initiation happen? It's the fly paper principle. You got to keep your bodhisattva vows, which is the six perfections. Okay, so that's what triggers the incident where you meet this person who gives you your vows, okay? And it's not like, don't think of it necessarily in terms of some guy organizes something and rents a hall and blah, blah, blah. I mean, a real initiation might take place the way it did in the ancient days of India, you know, Naropa. I don't forget who it is. He's sitting there, somebody heard Naropa could give them initiation and they go and he's like sitting there killing fish and throwing them into a frying pan alive, you know? And this guy loses faith immediately. He says, oh man, this guy is... I heard he was a tantric yogi. He's crazy. He's just a plain old fisherman and he's killing live fish, cooking them, you know. And I think it's Naropa, right? And he says, hey, you want some, you know? And the guy says, that's disgusting, you know. And he says, don't like it? And he says, no, I don't. And he says, oh, okay. And he throws him back in the water and he swim away. You know, and then he's like... you know, so I mean, it might be like that. The initiation might be, you know, don't think it has to be under the circumstances that you might think, okay? So there's, how many? I don't know. We lost it. This is initiation. That
the crystal palace. And then we go to the hexagon.
No, that's it. In the hexagon, okay. Yeah.
And there's no hallway between the crystal palace and the hexagon.
Right.
Yeah, there's no hallway.
And then what was leading into the hexagon was the mirrors. And then the one we're going to belt to meditate on. Okay. Yeah, the hallway with the windows. Okay, you look outside. So we got nine. I think we're nine.
Between the brain and the... No, because so far you've just said it's at the opening. And so there's a window hallway between your brain and the hexagon, right?
No.
And then you invited them to the secret room. Then you invited them to the secret room.
Oh, no, it's just a window.
Yeah. And then how much is secret? When did the secret stuff start?
At the Crystal Palace.
At the Crystal Palace. When did the Mahayana start?
After perfections.
Hexagon.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the
mirror room was
the mirror room and the hallway leading into it are middle capacity. Right. And we'll get to small capacity tomorrow. Hopefully. All right. So do a very short Midupagoma. Look out the window in the hallway leading into the mirror room at three things you like. And just accelerate them, you know, into senility. Okay? Which makes you want to go into the mirror room. Okay. Yeah, it's a tradition to bring it back, okay? It's a tradition to restore everything after you get done ruining everything, okay? You have to clean up your toys. All right. Okay. Bring it all back after you destroy it, okay? Bring it all back to normal. That's a custom. It's very much a custom. Here we go. Okay.
This is the end of session 4.